Gal, don't take me by no boo. I ain't gonna quit your pretty mama while the weather's cold. Around your back door, honey, I'm gonna creep. Just as long as you bring me 2½ a week. I've got a girl, she works in the white folks' yard. She brings me meal, I swear she brings me love. She brings me meal, honey, she brings me lard. She brings me everything, honey, that a girl can steal. Lord of Audeville Circus, right at Kingstown. They got a stint of looking nice and brown. They didn't know it was against the law for the monkeys to stop at a 5 cent store. Well, just around the corner, just a minute too late. Another one standing at the big back gate. I'm simply wild about my good cocaine. I stood my corner, hey, hey.
All right, everybody, it's the Brian and Vinny Show. It's June 26, 2013. Figure4online.com, WrestlingObserver.com. We have way too much stuff to talk about today, so no dilly-dallying. In fact, that's the end of the music.
Did you just shut down Dick Justice?
I just shut him down like, I don't know. Can't think of anything. We have Raw and SmackDown. We have the New Japan Dominion Eye pay-per-view. Yes, to be reviewed on this show with Vinny.
Yeah.
And we've got the Briscoe Brothers TV special. Now, we finished watching Dominion very late in the evening, and I was already tired, but I figure we may as well watch this Briscoe's documentary because them boys are in the news. So we're going to get to that, plus some news on them boys later on in the program. Those are your main events tonight. Prelims are the WWE show, since we've talked about them a million times already, but hey, Vinny watched them.
I did.
As you're all well aware, Vinny's got differing opinions from most of the people on this website. Right, Vinny?
Sometimes in the world.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know Twinkies are coming back?
I heard that.
I figured you did. What am I even asking you for?
How dare you?
All right, let's proceed with SmackDown.
As I sit here before you, I remember nothing about what happened on the show.
Well, thank God you took notes.
I did have copious detailed notes, in fact. Complete sentences and everything. Daniel Bryan came out for a promo, talked about his match being stopped on Raw the prior Monday. Said it was the first time in his career, his 13-year career, that a match was stopped due to injury. He wanted to keep fighting, but the officials had stopped the match because they thought he was the weak link. And then he said Randy Orton was the worst culprit of all because Orton had helped him to his feet, and he had seen pity in Randy Orton's eyes, patting him on the head like a little brother or a dog. And he said he was going to beat Randy Orton. He started chanting yes. And a lot of the crowd chanted yes, but a lot of them were also chanting no. So Orton came out, said he had been showing respect. Bryan ranted and demanded a match, and Orton basically said, fine, but they weren't going to be stopping the match tonight. They'll be carrying you out. And he stormed off, and they forgot to start his music, and there was an awkward silence. He got like halfway up the ramp before voices finally started. And honestly, I thought it was a pretty dull promo segment. Mm. Nothing I'd not seen before. Sheamus versus Cody Rhodes. Speaking of nothing I had not seen before. 4 days before this, I had watched Sheamus destroy Cody Rhodes and a partner by himself before losing on a slip on a banana peel finish. So if you thought I was going to get into watching Sheamus versus Cody Rhodes in a singles match, you were mistaken.
That's right. They went from the three-way to the singles match.
It wasn't even three-way. It was a handicap match where the heels...
That's right. A handicap to a singles.
Where a tornado handicap match. The heels didn't even have to tag in and out. And he manhandled them until the very end when he lost to be a schoolboy.
And keep in mind, he manhandled them, yet in this match, he had a long competitive match with Cody Rhodes.
Yeah.
So Cody is better on his own than with his teammates.
Yes. The only conclusion is that Damian Sandow was actually a negative as a wrestler. So the match is technically fine. I didn't care. None of the fans cared. It was boring. Sheamus won with a clover leaf, and then Damian immediately attacked him from behind because none of these guys have anything else to do. Curtis Axel versus Wade Barrett with Miz on commentary. Miz said he was still trying to figure out the finish to the three-way.
He doesn't have a replay?
Forget replay. Just explain it to him. You had the figure four on a guy, and then the third man pinned that guy where you had his legs hooked.
You couldn't get out fast enough.
You couldn't figure this out?
I did like that they did fancy ring introductions since it was an Intercontinental Championship match.
That's right, because they did it after the music, didn't they? Yeah. It was two heels against each other. They worked hard, but there was not a lot of heat. And Wade missed a middle rope elbow. Axel hit his spinning neckbreaker move that needs a new name. And he got the win. And then Miz got in the ring for a stare down, but Paul Heyman pulled Axel away. So yes, we are still getting Curtis Axel versus The Miz.
This is going to sound so absolutely horrendous, but I'm going to say it anyway. Miz, how can I say this without sounding like a complete meanie? I cannot stand his face. I know how bad that comes out. I don't even mean it really like that. But like, when I see his face, I just cannot take this man seriously.
So it used to be his hair.
I don't know. It's his face. He tried to stand up to Curtis Axel, and he's like wearing a suit, and his hair is all combed, and he's got his face. It's just like, really? You're challenging Kurt Axel?
Yes, Kurt Axel would beat his ass.
It's just like, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. I don't know if like he needs to, like Jay Briscoe needs to accidentally swing a chair and knock out some teeth, or I don't know. Maybe he needs to get his ears cauliflowered.
He could
or
use some scars and cauliflower ears.
Something. But he just, I mean, he looks like a Muppet. That's all there is to it. I could not take this. I mean, it was almost comedy seeing him try to act tough guy to Curtis Axel. And before everybody goes nuts on the board, no, I don't want to see anything bad happen to Mike Mizanin. I don't hate him as a person, but I'm here reviewing a wrestling show. And when I watch this wrestling show, when this wrestler is squaring off with another wrestler, I don't buy that this guy is even a wrestler. Continue.
AJ versus Natalya. This match went through a break.
It did.
For those of you who think perhaps the roster's a little thin, yes.
Actually, it's well, this shouldn't have gone through a break. But they do have a gimmick on SmackDown where it's like they go to a break as someone's coming down to the ring. They go to a break as someone's about to have a match. They go to, you know what I mean? As opposed to they go to a break and then when they come back, it's ring announcement, match, ring announcement. I don't know why they do this on SmackDown. I guess they're afraid that people have something else to watch on Friday nights. I don't know.
So, AJ won with a Black Widow, which is what they're calling her octopus move. They showed Layla and Caitlyn looking on disapprovingly backstage. Oksana arrived and called Caitlyn trash, which was very rude. Caitlyn started beating her up, and Layla proceeded to say, "Caitlyn, stop." Meanwhile, the Funkadactyls and Tamina finally ran in and broke it up. Layla was useless.
Yeah.
Chris Jericho had a fun match with Alberto Del Rio. Going in, my first thought was, Jericho's the guy before Daniel Bryan caught fire over the last month or so. Jericho was the guy who had the best match in every show, and Del Rio was the guy who had a good match in every show that nobody cared about. So it was kind of a irresistible force and movable objects in scenario here. And Jericho won. He had a good match that people cared about. They took turns going for their submission holds. Ricardo jumped up in the apron. Jericho dragged him into the ring and put him in the torture crab with a knee in the back. And Cole's actual line here was, and this is a quote, "putting him in the walls, lion tamer style." So after 20 years in this industry, Michael Cole has finally become a wrestling nerd.
I like how you called it a torture crab. That's a level of nerddom I can barely comprehend.
So Dolph ran in out of nowhere. He attacked Del Rio for the DQ, so Jericho lost. That made him angry, so he hit Dolph with a codebreaker and left him to die. And then Del Rio attacked the weakened Dolph and hit him with a super kick in his injured head. So all three guys were acting like dicks. You would think it was going to a three-way, but apparently plans change sometimes in the middle of a show.
That happens, yes.
Christian had a competitive match with Drew McIntyre. Wasn't very long. He fought off interference in 3MB and won with a kill switch. Started to cut a promo saying he had come back for one more match, but that's as far as he got before the Shield came out and destroyed him. They hit him with a triple power bomb, and then Seth Rollins very politely said, "Welcome back." They showed Lesnar killing Punk on Monday Night Raw, Renee Young interviewed Heyman and asked the following questions, or actually made the following statement. Mr. Heyman, here are the questions the WWE Universe wants to know.
They want to know the questions? I think they'd want to know the answers.
Do they actually say this stuff out loud when they write it down?
Of course not.
God. So, Hunk started asking personal questions about her father and her uncle and her fiancé, all of which may have meant something if we had ever heard of any of them ever, one time, even before. He said what happened between him and Punk was personal, so he was not going to discuss it on television. Main event was Orton versus Bryan. Guess what? It was good.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people still... no one was booing Bryan. In fact, the same thing happened on Raw, I think. No one was booing Bryan, but there were more people cheering for Orton. He would try to get them to chant yes, and the people chanting no would win out. And they started brawling on the floor, and Bryan hit a knee strike from the apron. He hit his tope, and he got back in the ring, and the ref counted Randy Orton out.
Yeah.
And unlike what Dean Ambrose did to Kane at the pay-per-view, where he hit a move, rolled inside, and the ref started counting to 10, this is the count out where they're outside at 9, and one guy rolls in, and then the ref counts 10. And it came off like a cheap win. Bryan knew it was a cheap win. He was pissed off, refused to take a count out victory. He demanded the match be restarted, and then the show just ended.
Let me give a friendly tip to Daniel Bryan for the future. If you don't want a count out win, then don't get back in. Right?
You'll get a count out draw.
Throw the other guy in.
Yeah, that too.
Is it 9 and you jumped in and then you got pissed? Did he hit 10?
Perhaps he thought he was in Japan and it was a 20 count.
I see. That's always possible. All right. That was SmackDown, everybody. An acceptable program.
It was a show.
It's fine.
Raw also opened with Daniel Bryan coming out for a promo. Daniel Bryan, if you're listening, if you want to go to a salon and get a shave and a haircut, I might chip in. I will chip in. I might pay for the whole thing. It's just time.
I say just trim the beard, but keep the hair.
At least buy some shampoo then. Mm-hmm. Getting greasy hair. It's disgusting. Baby faces should not be disgusting. They can be weird. So he said everyone talked about everyone telling him he was too small to be a wrestler, and they confused him with characters from The Hobbit. He was not the weak link. He would not be satisfied until he defeated Orton by pin or submission. Crowd was chanting no more than they were chanting yes again. Orton came out and said, shut up and fight. And so Bryan punched him right in the face.
You know, I think the problem is why Daniel Bryan got some boos on SmackDown and why Randy Orton was cheered when he came out here.
Yeah, because Randy Orton's good looking and Bryan is as ugly as he can be.
No, Vinny, that's not why. The problem is that Daniel Bryan is a babyface and he's not the weak link. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like people are actually accusing him of being the weak link. He is accusing himself of being the weak link, but everybody knows he's not the weak link. And even the other baby faces are telling him that he's not the weak link. So he comes off as just a crazy man. You know what I mean?
It's almost as if he's a poorly booked character.
Like maybe if
it's like they don't know how to write heroes.
Well, I wouldn't say he's poorly booked because the place goes nuts for him. But the point is, like, if he was a guy that he nearly got the win over and over, but like somebody screwed it up for him, and then whoever was screwing it up for him kept calling him a weak link. And so everybody knew he wasn't a weak link, and he was determined to overcome these odds and actually beat somebody so that everyone would know once and for all that he could do this. That would be one thing. But the dude just like he single-handedly ended the streak of the Shield. He is a great wrestler in the ring. He's never like, you know, like a numbskull that actually is a weak link on the team. So there's none of that pity for Daniel Bryan. You know what I mean? Or not even pity, but just like understanding. Like, I get why this guy wants to do this. You know, it's like everybody sees Daniel Bryan the same way all the baby faces see him. They're getting pissed off at him. Like, shut up, dude. You ain't the weak link. That's what the fans are thinking because they're looking at this exactly like the other baby faces are. So thank God he finally won. Now he can move on.
He's not going to move on, you know.
I probably will. I think they're going to move on now.
So after he punched Orton, they had a match that went like a minute before they brawled outside and both got disqualified. And then backstage, Vicky and Brad were BSing. And Daniel Bryan stormed in and demanded a rematch. Said it would end tonight. Brad Maddox then said they had a very full show and Bryan had already wrestled. Because Lord knows you can't ever change plans on Monday Night Raw.
Never.
So he demanded, Bryan demanded, either give me a match with Orton or I'm going to have a match with Brad. And Vicky gave him the match with Orton, so he left. And Vicky turned around and turned back, and there was Vince McMahon. He said some people thought Bryan was too small and too crazy to be a wrestler.
Can somebody provide me with, like, maybe a YouTube compilation or something that describes the supposed greatness of Brad Maddox? I have continued to hear this over and over again. Like, I can't believe Dave and Bryan didn't mention how awesome Brad Maddox was. Listen, I was told last weekend, Bryan, you've got to watch the New Japan Dominion show. It is a great show. It is a fabulous show. And the Shibata versus Goto match in particular may be the match of the year. And I heard all of these wonderful things about this show, and I watched the show, and in fact, this show was awesome, and there were a lot of wonderful matches on this show, and it was outrageously great. I have absolutely no idea what anyone is talking about with Brad Maddox. Am I missing something?
He's a guy. He does not, except for that one NXT show we watched, where he was horrible in commentary, but in his backstage skits, I think he's fine. I don't think he's hysterical.
I don't think he's that funny at all. I think every now and then he does something that makes me smile a little bit, but I'm apparently just like out to lunch or something, or everyone else is out to lunch. I'm not sure which. Anyway.
Sheamus and Christian versus the Road Scholars. So, I don't know. We did the math in the last segment about how Damien's actually a negative. Perhaps Christian is also a negative to offset Damien's negativity. Here was the part of the show during this tag match where they allowed Jerry Lawler to say some nice words about Jackie Fargo. Then JBL talked about Sandow challenging him to a duel on their YouTube show, saying he had potatoed JBL with a white glove. That's all just noise. Christian is really awesome at tag team wrestling. I know that's shocking. So they had a very fun TV tag match. And I loved this finish. This finish was great. Sheamus is in there running wild, and he's got Damien up for white noise, but Damien slips out the back. He goes over his corner, and he tags in Cody, but then as Cody tries to get in, Sheamus is in his way trying to leave through the same pair of ropes, and they bounce into each other once or twice, and Cody shoves Damien down, and he turns around, and Sheamus kicks him right in the face and pins him.
Yeah.
Because when heels fuck up, well, that's why they're heels, really. So, yeah, that's how wrestling should be done right there. At the time, I presume Sheamus and Christian were going to team up and feud with the Shield, but what do I know? Vicky approached CM Punk backstage. He didn't want to talk to her. He just wanted to be informed whenever Paul Heyman or Brock Lesnar arrived. Kaylin was wrestling Oksana right at the beginning of the match. AJ came out dressed like Kaylin with big fake muscle arms, which I love. That's something to be made fun of, that she works out.
Well, the issue is not that she works out. The issue is that the heels claim that she works out to the point that she looks like a man. Not just a man, a buff man. Vinny.
Yeah.
The last thing a girl wants to hear is that she has man arms.
I see.
It doesn't matter if this girl works out every single day of her life. She does not want man arms.
All right. So Kaylin was distracted and still won with a spear. Sucks to be Oksana. And then Big E came out with a bouquet, and they reenacted the secret admirer angle. The key to this was that AJ was openly making fun of Caitlyn's horrible acting. And she said, "Big E, it's you?" That's the gimmick now, is that Caitlyn sucks. So Big E was awesome. I actually really enjoyed AJ here. She said she'd always dressed up like Caitlyn. She said she'd always dreamed of meeting a man with a voice deeper than hers and legs bigger than hers. And Layla had to hold Caitlyn back, and the heels just cackled and left. You're fantastic, Eels. Jericho and Del Rio had another match, and I thought this was even better than the match on SmackDown. There was a weird spot where Del Rio hit a super kick for a near fall, and Jericho kicked out at 2.8, and Del Rio came up laughing. So Del Rio hooked the armbar. Jericho walked up the ropes and turned into the Boston Crab. That was great. And then Ricardo just hit him with a bucket for the DQ.
Now, everybody, I'm not going to rant about the bucket again. I know everybody's waiting for it, but I'm not going to do it.
Yeah,
I've said my piece about this stupid bucket.
He is still carrying a bucket.
But I would like to say just one thing. Mm-hmm. I understand why Jim Cornette had a tennis racket. That makes sense. Unlike the bucket. Go on.
So, yeah, Ricardo attacked, which was a DQ. So Jericho had already won. Then Dolph ran in and attacked Del Rio. They cleared the ring, and then Jericho and Dolph had a stare down. JBL made a great point asking, why is Jericho so angry? Dolph had just helped him out. And then Jericho started to leave, and Dolph grabbed him and hit a zigzag. So for the second show in a row, everyone in this angle is acting like a dick.
To lead to not a three-way.
To lead to nothing.
Maybe they'll have a three-way on TV.
It could. There's a million things they could do. Vicky and Brad were talking about canceling the Bryan match because Vince had talked about how Bryan was too small and too crazy. Triple H arrived and said the universe wanted the match and Vicky should let the universe pick the steps.
The universe.
Yeah. I'm just going to read the next part of my notes verbatim. They aired a commercial where a middle-aged woman dialed 1-800-FELLA to have Sheamus kick a tree to get her cat out of it, and then the lady wanted to fuck him, and he ran away. Is that accurate, Brian?
That about covers it, yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure I want to know I'm on top of what's going on.
Was it funnier or less funny than Brad Maddox?
I don't know if either of them were funny. This was at least... This is funnier, because at least this was bizarre. This is absurd, and I laugh at absurdity. Jerry Lawler was in the ring with Vicky and Brad. They did a long segment that just led to them showing off that Rock's on the cover of the video game. Went a long goddamn time.
I thought Vicky was awesome. She got a lot of heat on a show that didn't get a lot of heat for a lot of things.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Good job, Vicky.
She also...
Of heat.
I did note here, passionate booing. As JBL noted, was disrespectful. And you can't argue with them. It's true.
A ridiculous amount of booing.
They were disrespecting her with boos. So she said the fans could vote for a street fight, a lumberjack match, or a false count anywhere match. They started talking about... they showed Rock on the cover of the video game and started listing numbers from all his movies, because he's a big star now. Ryback wrestled the Great Khali.
Oh, God.
This was as horrible as you'd think. Until the finish, and that's all that matters. Ryback went for the shell shock. Now...
Yes?
When you're working with a guy, and you go to give him a slam or a suplex, he's going to go up for you. Which is basically jumping. Great Khali can't jump. At this point in his life, he is too immobile to go up for you. So, not because he's a bad wrestler, but not because he's has a poor work ethic or because he was trying to make Ryback look bad. He deadweighted him because that's all he can do, because he sucks. But Ryback is mighty, and even though the Great Khali deadweighted him, he still got him up for the shell shock, still marched him around twice in a circle, hit him with a move and won. So, yes, Ryback is, in fact, strong.
I'm still absolutely completely baffled as to why Ryback sold the entire match for the Great Khali before beating him.
Because Great Khali's selling sucks. I don't want... His offense also sucks, but it's watchable. Great Khali as the babyface in peril is bad fucking times.
Okay, nothing is going to happen with the Great Khali anytime in the near future. Except he may disappear off TV for a while because they got to get rid of the him and Natalya storyline. Because she's on Total Divas and she... And TJ Wilson are a couple.
Just put Tyson Kidd on stilts. Dennis
so
Khali.
Tyson, obviously, they got to do something with Khali. So I don't know if he's going to be around a lot for a while. And Ryback just came back from losing in the main event to John Cena for the title. So why didn't the bell ring and the Great Khali swung for a clothesline, Ryback ducks, and then hoists him up, does his march around twice, shell shock, 1, 2, 3. Why would that have been bad? I think that would have been good.
That would have been better.
End this quick.
That would have been
make
better.
Make Ryback look good, because if nothing else, he's going to be around.
John Cena came out and cut a, frankly, great promo. He name dropped Rey Mysterio, although he did it as the guy who only held the belt for one night, so I'm not sure that's a good thing or not. He said Mark Henry's fake speech last night had been a slap in the face to guys who had given real retirement speeches like Edge and HBK and Ric Flair. And he saved Flair for last because A, it's Ric Flair, and B, they were in the Carolinas. He told Henry to check the calendar because it was whoop-ass season. He vowed to knock Henry's teeth down his throat at the pay-per-view. And it was super intense, angry Cena, and that's always fun.
I guess so. I just, maybe my brain just shuts off at John Cena promos now. But I've been watching John Cena cut promos now for 10 years. The champ is here. I'm the champ. I'm going to beat you up. I don't know.
You just described all wrestlers ever.
I know, but I'm
yes, we have seen John Cena for 10 years.
I'm done with it now.
And for a good chunk of that time, probably on both shows for 10 years.
It's not like, you know, he's I don't know. I'm done with it. I finally had my fill of John Cena. Thank God there's a lot of awesome stuff on this show. And it doesn't bother me that much. Obviously, John Cena's the guy, but I have finally, maybe I'm the last guy. Maybe I'm that last dude that finally has just entered the let's boo John Cena anytime he comes out, no matter what.
Apparently not, because I like this. So I'm after you.
All right, well, you're the last
guy.
Soul survivor.
Yes.
I have finally had my fill of John Cena. Time for something new.
In a very short three-way tag match with tons of funk versus the Usos versus three-man band. A top contenders match that went like 2 or 3 minutes with six dudes flying around doing stuff. That's always a good way to get the winners over. Highlight was actually the fan who had won the right to do an entrance on the Sandy Relief auction. So he came out in a tracksuit with the fat guys doing a dance, having a great old time. Usos pinned Tensai. Shield came out. They had a stare down, and that was it. I am happy the Usos won. I know they're going to lose the eventual match. They should lose the eventual match, but I like them. So at least they're doing something with them. They re-aired that wacky skit from the call where Kane was stalking Halle Berry. Call is out on DVD. I'm hoping they don't plug this every single week, but I think they will. Heyman and Punk had a promo segment. Punk started talking about how he had signed with the company in 2005 and John Laurinaitis sent him to Louisville and Paul Heyman was in charge there and Vince didn't like him and wanted Punk fired, which, first of all, the idea that Heyman could fire and hire anyone he wanted in Louisville is funny. But the point of all this was no one in South Carolina cared about what these two had done in Louisville, Kentucky 8 years ago.
Yeah.
No one was into it. Punk realized nobody was into it, outright said that he didn't want to bore anyone, and just started getting in Heyman's face. He had a message for Brock, saying that he was not bigger than Brock, but he was better, and he was going to take the Beast Incarnate down. He then demanded to know if Brock had been acting on his own, or if Heyman had sent Brock to sick Punk. Heyman started talking about knowing Punk for a long time, and he said professional jealousy between Brock and Punk had run deep, which is why he never put them together as a tag team. Said Punk was the one who said Brock Lesnar needed Heyman's help. When you did that, you essentially picked a fight with Brock Lesnar. I had nothing to do with that. Said he would never represent a wrestler who was facing Punk, including Brock. Crowd was not in any of this except when they chanted, "We want Lesnar." And Punk stood conflicted for a while. Crowd was chanting for a GTS. And finally, he said he was sorry for doubting Paul, and he gave him a hug. The camera zoomed in on his face, and this is not quite as severe as when Bully Ray hugged Brooke Hogan after she agreed to marry him, and he gave a look into the camera that said, "I'm going to do very, very evil things." But Punk's face was not the face of a man who looked happy and secure with his friendship. His guard was still up.
I personally thought this was awesome. I thought everyone involved was awesome. I was very happy that Punk has trimmed the mutton chops and kind of combed his hair a little bit. That was a big plus. But seriously, their performances were fabulous. I don't fault the crowd. This crowd in particular was not a great crowd. And they did not care one iota about this history lesson.
Yeah.
And it's not the first time that anytime you've got like Paul Heyman and CM Punk and Brock Lesnar and any combination of them in any sort of segment, I mean, it's going to be great because of the individual involved. But I can understand fans not getting into. Remember when they were doing like Punk and Triple H and all they could do was talk about business and contracts?
Yes, that was a lousy feud.
It's like, really? You expect fans to care one bit about the contract status of Brock Lesnar? Nobody cares. They want to see Brock Lesnar beat the crap out of somebody or vice versa. You know, I think that they wanted. I loved what they did here, but I think the fans just wanted Punk to come out and beat up Paul Heyman or have Paul Heyman lie to his. I don't know what they wanted, but they did not want.
Did not want what they got.
What they got, which is too bad.
I will say, and we talked about this, but I think Punk deserves a ton of credit for being smart enough and ballsy enough and talented enough to realize the promo he was cutting was not working. Let's try something different. Because he changed his tune quickly.
I want to see where they're going with this because Paul, obviously, is lying.
Yes.
And Punk is, you've got to protect your babyface. Your babyface cannot be a complete numbskull where everybody knows that Paul is lying except the babyface. That just makes Punk an idiot. So I want to see where they go with this because obviously Punk has got to figure out that Paul is lying and then he has got to maneuver and make Paul look like a fool in the end.
Yeah.
So we shall see.
We went from that promo, which nobody cared about, to CM Punk wrestling Darren Young.
Bad idea.
Nobody cared about this either.
And why should they?
First of all, no one in the world thought Darren Young had a chance of beating CM Punk. Second of all, no one wanted to see Darren Young wrestle CM Punk. Then they went out and tried to have a competitive match. I guess that's nice of Punk that he didn't just bury Young and make him look like a fool, but goddammit, this crowd wanted to see him bury Young and make him look like a fool. The announcers got bored and began discussing items such as, not making this up, tennis and lint. Finally, Punk won with the Anaconda Vice, and then the finish was weird. Punk put the move on, and Young started tapping almost before the hold was even on. And then the ref called for the bell, and Punk looked pissed at him. So both primetime players attacked Punk. Curtis Axel ran out to make the save. All four dudes had a very bad brawl. And finally, Punk and Axel cleared the ring and stared at each other. And Heyman said that Axel had done the right thing and said it was 2-on-1. We had no choice. And Punk walked out. This segment was very bad.
Yeah, this was no good, I'm afraid. I don't think Punk was hurt all that bad. I think he hurt his knee a little bit. I don't know. The match just was like horrendous. But apparently he's fine.
I would imagine he was selling his knee, and they were talking about he hurt his knee even before WrestleMania, and that was why he had taken that time off. But I don't know.
I was looking for an excuse for the
the lousy match he had.
Yes, I didn't get one.
He tried to do a match, not realizing it was not the match people wanted to see at all. And maybe he thought he could make Darren Young a star. I don't know. Stephanie met with Vicky. She was upset that the show was nearly over and Vicky had not yet announced the participants for Money in the Bank. Then she said she'd just do it herself later. Bellas came out to hand out magazines to the fans. There's a poster of the Bellas in this edition of the magazine. Some of these fans have more charisma than many people on the roster. Stephanie then announced the ladder match participants. CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, Sheamus, Randy Orton, Christian, Kane, and Rob Van Dam. Couple things. First of all, 7 dudes. That's random. More important, you can get one heel
into this
match.
7 every year, isn't it?
It's usually 6 or 8 or an even number. I'm sure there's been 7 before one time.
Find out.
A bigger point, honestly, is that their heel roster is so weak, they couldn't get one bad guy in a Money in the Bank match. The obvious choice would have been Ryback, but clearly they had other plans for him.
All right, last year they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in one of them. And then in the other one, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh, there you go.
8 and 5.
That's weird, too.
SmackDown ladder match, by the way, this year is going to be Wade Barrett, Jack Swagger, back from court, and Tony Cesaro.
So that's Dean, all bad guys.
Dean Ambrose, by the way. So for all of you that were so outraged at my idea that the champion could be in Money in the Bank, well, now the U.S. champion is in Money in the Bank, Dean Ambrose, Fandango, Cody Rhodes, and Damian Sandow.
It is all bad guys. This is their plan.
Yeah.
All right.
All heels.
That actually makes you be consider things. It's different this year, at least. All right. I feel a little better about things. Vicky and Brad had a meeting backstage. Brad said it had been his idea to have Stephanie announce the ladder match dudes. Ryback stormed in, demanded they take Mark Henry out of the title match against John Cena and put him in. Jericho interrupted, said he invented the Money in the Bank match. He had been in more of them than anyone else. He deserved a spot in the match this year. All good points. And then Ryback made fun of Jericho for whining. Said he could eat Jericho alive. Jericho replied, "I'd like to see you try, Mr. Back." Which is even funnier than the Ryback. Brad Maddox tried to break it up, but he pushed out. Then Vicky stepped in, and she actually did break it up and lay down the law. She was great here. And she said she booked Jericho versus Ryback for Money in the Bank. So Jericho is now feuding with at least 3 men, and they are having a singles match instead of being in the ladder matches because they just need a singles match. Punk confronted Heyman backstage. Punk insisted he needed no help. Heyman, I guess, booked a match between Axel and Punk versus the Primetime Players. I guess he can do that now. Punk said he would take the match because he was not afraid of a fight, but he was going to prove he didn't need their help, and he was going to regain the WWE title. Mark Henry came out for more talking. By this point in the show, it had been well over an hour. In fact, I think close to 2 hours since I had seen a good wrestling match. Henry had a great line where he said that he had been getting scripts from directors and phone calls from directors all day, like Quentin Tarantino, Steven Spielberg, and Tyler Perry. He spent his whole life being a role model for children and competing for his country in the Olympics. At Money in the Bank, we're going to see a no-good, low-down cheat in Mark Henry. He was going to go home as the champ. It was fine. They announced that Alberto would be throwing a fiesta to celebrate his title win on SmackDown. This is going to happen nearly 2 full weeks after he actually won the belt. And then Daniel Bryan versus Randy Orton had a street fight in the main event, and they had a great match. Key to this is, and you know the story by now, is that Bryan had to prove himself that he could overcome injury and he was not the weak link. But they had a spot where he got the no lock on Orton, and Orton was able to grab a stick and whack his way free. And the first thing he did was hit Bryan in the face, and he immediately apologized and had a bunch of shots to the body. And then for the finish, they did the exact same spot, only Orton grabbed the stick and he tried to break his way free, but Bryan grabbed the stick and pulled it against his own face, keeping his arm trapped, and Orton was screaming and screaming and had to tap out. Orton was still the slight favor here, maybe 60-40. So people were upset when Bryan won. But, 60% of them were upset. 40% were very happy. And Bryan had a giant celebration.
I remember them all being happy.
There were people. Half the crowd was chanting yes, 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 and playing with their arms in the air, roughly half. And some people were standing there. They were pissed off that their hero, Randy Orton, had not won. And in fact, he had tapped out. There were some "you tapped out" chants. And Orton stared him down afterwards.
I don't think those were his fans.
Hmm?
I don't think those were his fans chanting "you tapped out."
No, I guess not. So he shook Brian's arm with his good hand. Or shook Brian's hand with his good arm. That makes more sense. And he left the ramp. Jesus Christ. He shook Brian's hand with his good arm.
How about you retire from this review? This particular one.
Walked up the ramp. He was sullen, but it was a dandy of a main event. But the the hour and a half or 2 hours before that match was really boring.
I think the problem was it was just a bad crowd. I don't think there were any fans that were upset that Daniel Bryan won. I just think it was a bad crowd. It got a great reaction. It didn't get the reaction when he beat the Shield. Nope, but it was Charleston, South Carolina. Bad crowd. And unfortunately, this was his big win, and it was in front of a bad crowd. Where are they, actually? Let me find out where they are this coming Monday. I want to see if this can be remedied. Because, in fact, the big follow-up to this win on SmackDown was he wasn't on SmackDown at all.
Awesome.
So I presume that's because they want to do the follow-up on Raw. SmackDown this week was in Columbia, South Carolina. Probably not the a hotbed. Maybe I'm wrong. Raw this coming Monday night. Let's see here. What's Monday? What day is that? Look on your thing.
The date?
Yes.
That would be the 31st.
All right. So the 31st Raw is going to be in Sioux City, Iowa. I guess we'll see. I don't know how hot a crowd that's going to be. But anyway, it looks like the follow-up for Daniel Bryan is going to be next Monday on Raw. So hopefully the crowd is awesome, because he's being pushed all summer, so he needs some good reactions. Better than he got on Monday here. Wasn't a bad reaction, just could have been a lot better. Same goes for everything on the show, except Vicky Guerrero. That could not have been better. Alrighty, this New Japan, let's talk about the Briscoes first. What do you think of this Briscoes documentary?
The opening was great. I thought the ending was great. I thought some of the interviews they had in the middle of the show were pretty interesting. I thought the clips they showed of old matches were way too long and some really, really bad wrestling.
Yeah, they
Ring of Honor as a show has come a long way.
Ring of Honor had a string of years where their main events were outstanding. You had Daniel Bryan, Samoa Joe, Nigel McGuinness, guys like that. But, man, some of these clips they showed of ROH back in the day, back in the supposed glory years, and really they were quite glorious in a lot of ways, but oh my God, Special K? Who else was on this show? Just the early Briscoes?
They showed the early Briscoes match, which was 400,000 moves. Any one of which would have looked cool. They just took turns doing 1,000 moves. They had the match with Izzy and Dixie, which I used to review a lot of ROH DVDs for the newsletter, and I have a soft spot in my heart for Special K, just because the gimmick of 400 skinny geeks dancing to techno music entertain me. But then when they had to have matches, at least here with Izzy and Dixie, no good.
No. Not good.
And they show the, what else did they have in there? A lot of stuff in the Ladder War, which is not boring, which is just stupid. And that's the exact word Jay Briscoe used to describe it. We did a lot of stupid shit. The one match that they showed a lot of, which was great, was Papa Briscoe running wild on the Kings of Wrestling.
That was great.
That stuff was awesome. But, I mean, beyond just being bad wrestling, the production was poor. The announcers were, I'm sorry, no good. Just two high-pitched guys shouting out a bunch of move names.
I'm not really going to even defend like the current production values of ROH. I mean, there's still a lot of work that could be done. But my God, what are people talking about nowadays? Like there was ever good production with ROH? Like, it's a million times better now than it was back in the day. Maybe they had some buildings where smaller building, more fans, looked outrageous, like millions of people there, like an old ECW show in a small building. But as far as like the actual production values back in the day, they were very bad.
Yeah. Some stuff with the World's Greatest Tag Team, too. That was fine. But opening segment was just life on the chicken farm. They are legit chicken farmers. 30,000 chickens on their farm, and apparently many of them die every single day. A significant part of their job is dealing with dead chickens. Just life on the farm with their dad and stuff. That was great, actually. We saw them piling into an RV with their... What's their uncle's name? Is it Jethro?
Yes.
Uncle Jethro and the camera crew, they piled into an RV and headed to the show. Told stories on the road, stories of how Mark lost his teeth, which when he was standing behind Jay, when Jay was swinging a chair, and, well, there you go. And Mark said it never hurt, and he just liked to show off his teeth to people and freak them out. And he talked about having kids, how that changed him, how he had to work harder to make sure they had a good life. And there was lots of clips of Jay's young son having a feud with Papa Briscoe in the ring in their backyard. And then the last bit where they had basically, they took turns cutting promos and they edited them together. So you got one line from each guy back and forth. And it was really cool. Just both calling out at each other, how they're going to have their wives there, the kids there, Papa Briscoe there, the whole family there. All of Sussex County is going to be there. When we fight on iPay-per-view, best in the world. You got to see the show. You can't miss the show. Turns out they can, and they did. But yeah, the promos were great. But that I think that's everything I have to say on that show.
It's a pretty good show. It was a good character profile of the guys. Of course, we watched it after the match already took place.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Couldn't really get that excited about watching it since show was over. But as far as like a one-hour special to build it up, thought they did a pretty good job. I think that, hard to say, I've seen a lot of Briscoes. I've met the Briscoes. I've interviewed the Briscoes. So I know a lot about the Briscoes. So I really didn't learn a lot watching it, you know what I mean? But I mean, if you were just an average wrestling fan and you just saw these guys on TV and then you watched this this documentary, I think when it was over, you'd be a hell of a lot more into the Briscoes.
I don't see how you couldn't.
Yeah. But obviously that's a moot point for the time being, as the Briscoes are no longer with ROH, at least for the time being. A lot of stuff up on the front page about it right now. Very quickly, here's the deal. I know that there are online reports that this has to do with Jay Briscoe's tweets. And in fact, it does not. If you recall, when Jay won the title, which had actually been planned for a long, long time, they actually had planned that title change when Kevin Steen first won the title. So that was a long time in the making. And if you recall, Jay won the title, and pretty much immediately they announced he was going to be challenging or defending against Mark. And I remember at the time I was like, hold on a second. You've got Jay Briscoe as a champion, and if he's going to be champion for like any length of time, wouldn't it make sense that you would build towards this big brother versus brother showdown for the title? Why is his very first challenger, really, his first major challenger, why are they already doing the match with Mark? And I wasn't told why, but I was told that there's a reason for this. So anyway, the point is, everything that has happened in the last week between the finish of the pay-per-view and the brothers getting laid out at the TV tapings and them no longer being on the active roster, this was all planned way back, long before Jay Briscoe made any tweets. And I was told that the Sinclair people, Jay, really did honestly donate his salaries to charity after that whole thing went down. He apologized to Sinclair, and he apologized publicly. And I was told that once that happened, they were like, all right, fine, you did all this stuff, moving on. So it was a dead issue. So the tweets didn't have anything to do with what happened here. Although there are people in ROH that think that they were offered a WWE deal, and that's why they were rushed into doing a feud together, because the company felt they were leaving. And it is possible that the tweets may have resulted in that offer no longer being on the table. I don't know if that's the case, but it would certainly make sense if he put everything together. So essentially, the feeling is from people there that if WWE makes him an offer, if they end up going to WWE, because their contracts really have expired, they are no longer in a contract with ROH, that part is true. If WWE makes them an offer and they go to WWE, then that is the end of this whole thing. And if WWE doesn't make them an offer, then they will end up back in ROH probably sooner rather than later. So anyway, that's the story with the Briscoes. And I don't know what they're going to do with the belt, but I presume they're going to do a tournament. which makes the most sense. And I guess we'll find out sometime soon. But yep, that's the story with the Briscoes. And them leaving was known when they did this special, when they booked the pay-per-view. And yes, I guess they could have taken the belt off off of Jay, but they would have just put it on Mark. And they're gone. So there you go. That's all I know.
All right.
Briscoe Brothers.
More than I know.
Briscoe Brothers, everybody.
Yeah. So we watched a New Japan show.
Yeah.
Dominion's June 22nd.
Mm-hmm. Still on Ustream, everybody.
I know. I can't say I know nothing about New Japan, but I know very little.
Vinny is aware that it's a promotion located in Japan.
I understand that it's new.
Actually, no, it's very older than you.
Yeah. I'm going to screw up all these names.
That's why you're leading this.
Yes.
Comedy purposes.
I, every sentence you'll know what I'm stalling. I'm hoping you'll say, let me handle this, Vinny.
No. Go ahead.
I'm going to read this. You were kind enough to email me the card. It actually may be a press release of what happened, but... Pre-match show, which we did not watch, was Jushin Liger and Tiger Mask versus Takemichi Noku and Taichi.
See, that's pretty good so far.
And three of these people I actually recognized.
You did not call him Justin Liger. Which my computer kept trying to switch it to Justin Luger. The autocorrect.
He is the guy who, he because of him, we called Todd Grisham TCS for a long time.
That's right.
Short for that, Cocksucker from the Benoit DVD.
What did he say?
I think he called him Jushin.
Well, really? I got that upset over that? Then it had to have been
I think it was the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back.
Nice.
Probably not the first mistake he had made. It's more just because he's doing the... You know, I don't know how many of you have seen this, and I don't know how many of you are going to watch this now at this point. But...
I just seem to recall he did commentary with like Benoit and Guerrero.
Yeah.
And they both clearly wanted to kick his ass.
Yes, that is the key. And he's asking questions. What did he ask? I don't remember any examples. I'm not going back to check. But he was asking questions that indicated he had no idea what the fuck was going on. And he was not asking questions like what's it like to wrestle Liger? How many matches did you have? What's his style? He asked things like, why was he wearing red there? Or other just stupid shit. Anyway, Liger didn't win. Taichi pinned Tiger Mask with what this this report says is the Taichi style Gato clutch.
Yeah,
it was a very wacky hold. 7:09 was the match time.
This was a dark match, believe it or not. Jushin Liger in a dark match.
That was pretty amazing.
He moves pretty good for being like I think he's 48 now.
He's really old for a wrestler.
This is like
a wrestler who has wrestled a very hard style. Didn't he have a tumor?
I believe so,
in
actually.
His brain?
Yes. I forgot about that.
Yes.
This is my goal when I return to wrestling, is to wear a full body suit and mask and wig so I can continue to wrestle till I'm 200 years old and no one will know any better.
That's a good point.
Although I may slow down a little bit.
That's a good point. Pay-per-view started with the IWGP Junior Tag Team Championship. The Forever Hooligans, great name, Rocky Romero and Alex Kozlov versus the Time Splitters. I don't know what that means, of Kushida and Alex Shelley.
Well, they go from Japan back and forth so often that they travel 400 days a year.
I see. They had a fun match. I don't know. Actually, this was really good. I remember this now. I've watched a lot of shit today, but when it all blended together after a while. They had a very fun tag team match. A lot of action. Kozlov singing the Russian national anthem, far worse than Nikolai Volkov ever did. And it was actually great. It was a Japanese crowd, which is a very different crowd than the American crowd, because when he ordered them, you will all stand and show your respect and be silent as I sing the Russian national anthem, they stood in respectful silence.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sung badly, and when he was done, they all applauded.
Yeah.
That made this the best show of the week.
That's their gimmick.
I guess.
He does this on all the shows. He says he's going to sing the anthem. He sings it absolutely horribly. They all stand, and then they cheer when he's done.
Hey! Sportsmanship, hurrah! So yes, they had a very fun tag match. Romero got the win with something called the Contract Killer on Kushida. Their first successful title defense.
Thought this match was awesome. I gave this 4.25 stars, believe it or not. Every single person involved in this match absolutely rules. They let Alex Shelley go. I'm talking about TNA because they're complete, absolute idiots.
Yeah.
Kozlov, I believe, if I recall correctly, was in WWE developmental and he was let go. I'd have to go back and check. I forget. But he's awesome. And yeah, this was a great match. Awesome spots. And one of my favorite matches on the show, in fact. So check this one out.
We had a six-man of Machine Gun Carl Anderson, Tama Tonga, and the underboss, Bad Luck Folly.
My favorite wrestler right now.
Which looks like it should be pronounced Bad Luck Fail.
That's the other reason I love it.
Even funnier. They face the trio of Yuji Nagata, Tomoaki Hanma, and Captain New Japan.
That's right. So, by the way, Kozlov was under WWE contract, and they released him. So, add that to the list.
Yeah.
What's wrong with these idiots?
He's not tall.
Care?
I'm just saying.
They heard Vladimir Kozlov, for the love of God.
Yes. 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 Well, speaking of WWE developmental, Tama Tonga is Haku's son, and I can't believe he's not there right now. He looked really good, and he's...
Let me talk more about Bad Luck Fale.
Son. Go ahead.
His gimmick is he's the underboss, so I presume he's like a Yakuza. I may be wrong. But yes, when you read it in English, you would read it as Bad Luck Fail, which, first off, that's the best name I've ever heard. He's got Bad Luck on, I believe, his front, and underboss on the back. He's a big... I guess kind of fat.
Imagine a tall Japanese man who is dressed as Doc as the Aces and Eights for Halloween.
Yes, but he's got like a bleached goatee.
Yeah.
Sunglasses. He's not very good, but he's a big fella. And his name is Bad Luck Fale.
Yeah.
What could be better? Captain New Japan.
Yeah, the story of this match. The babyface team had two great wrestlers and a clown. And Captain New Japan was a clown. He had the most Power Ranger looking outfit I've ever seen, including the Power Rangers themselves. It was also velour. So the two stud wrestlers went the whole way. They never tagged him in. And then as they were running wild, I think it was Nagata. He had a big move.
And the fans wanted Captain New Japan in.
And Captain New Japan demanded a tag. And he threw his hand out there. And Nagata looked at him, and he looked at the people, and he looked at Captain New Japan, and he just shrugged and his body and facial language just screamed, "What the fuck?
You can't win them all."
He knew this was doomed to fail, but he could not turn down the request of the fans. And he tagged in Captain New Japan, and New Japan ran wild for like a minute, and then he got pinned because Bad Luck Fail hit him with the grenade, which is a choke slam into the Asiatic spike.
Yes. Which looks horrible.
Of course it does.
I mean, he kind of gets him over the choke slam. He kind of thumbs him in the neck.
Yes.
It's even better because it's Bad Luck. I'm just going to call him Bad Luck Fail. It's his new name. It's a new pronunciation of his name. But he's my favorite wrestler. Captain New Japan is like, you know, he has his gimmick. But they give him a little bit of credibility, like just a little. So he's not like a complete Santino. You know what I mean? But this match was a star and three quarter. I gave it. It was entertaining for what it was. I never need to see it again, ever.
Match three. The IWGP Tag Team Championship three-way.
Mm-hmm.
With the champions, Hiroshi Tenzan and Satoshi Kojima.
Good.
There's this first team of Toru Yano and Takashi Iizuka.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the Killer Elite Squad, which is a great name, of, I believe it's Lance Archer and Davey Boy Smith Jr.
Yes.
Yeah.
Someone can explain this. Alan or somebody can explain this if I'm wrong. But my understanding was Tenzan and Kojima, the team name, had the team name of Tenkoji for Ten... Zan and Kojima.
Yeah.
Tenkoji. But the lineup that I sent you had them listed as Tenkoji.
Yeah.
Like, it's awfully cozy in here.
And there's 10 of us. 10.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe that's actually, maybe it is 10 cozy.
I can't tell you. I only got one thing to say about this. There was a spot here where the heels, I guess the heels, the American team got thrown outside, the Killer Elite Squad, and they taped Smith and Archer to the guardrail, just with like plain athletic tape, and they had to pretend they could not escape without help. But probably for the better of the match, that if you tape Lance Archer to a guardrail and have the other guys do the work inside the ring.
Lance Archer has improved a lot.
I'm sure he has.
As has Davey Boy Smith. This match was fine.
He was always, his work was always fine. He was just bland. But I will be honest, I left to make a phone call here, and when I came back 5 minutes later, the match was over.
Kojima pinned Archer. I gave it 2.5 stars. It was fine. There was a ref bump. There were some gimmicks. Tenzan and Kojima, I remember I watched them a lot in like the early 2000s. They're much older now, obviously.
So am I.
So are you. But it was all right. It was fine.
For the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, Rob Conway versus Manabu Nakanishi.
Yes. I was waiting to see this. I don't watch a lot of Japanese pro wrestling, but when I heard this match, I knew trouble was coming. I remember Nakanishi years ago, and he is also much older. Lost the hair, doesn't do the wacky dance as much as he used to. Rob Conway is the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. And what the hell is the...
I don't even know and I don't care.
New Japan.
Oh, no.
Or the NWA.
There was an NWA suit out there.
Oh, God, I knew his name as I was doing the show and then I just totally blanked.
Bruce something?
Bruce Sarp. Bruce Sarp is out there to introduce him. And my notes read, and I quote, "Perfectly fine, bad match." It was, exactly as I expected, a bad match. But as far as bad matches go, it was fine. That makes sense, everybody? Like, it could have been a much worse bad match.
I've seen many matches worse than this.
I gave it 1 star.
This is much better than CM Punk and Darren Young.
Actually, yes, it was. Now, don't get me wrong. It was very bad. Mostly because of Nakanishi.
Yeah.
He is really bad. Rob Conway is just like, you know, Rob Conway, just imagine straight out of Ohio Valley,
going to
Japan to face old Manabu Nakanishi. Rob Conway was
an old school Southern heel here in a 2013 Japan match where he was about to drop a leg. He said, "I'm going to break his neck." He dropped a leg and he made a cover and Nakanishi kicked out. And so he said, "I'm going to break his neck again." And then at a random point, he just stopped wrestling. He just shouted out, "Japan sucks."
Yeah.
And no one cared.
It was a perfectly fine bad match.
Styles clash.
I don't think there's any style that does not clash with Manabu Nakanishi.
I'm not
nowadays.
Sure what style that would be. That's a good point. Match 5. Shinsuke Nakamura and Tomohiro Ishii versus Minoru Suzuki and Shelton X Benjamin.
Yeah.
I don't know. Most of this was Ishii and Suzuki. It was like 80% of it was a singles match between those two. And the other guys just came in and hit some high spots.
Suzuki beat the hell out of Ishii. And when the match was over, they had a wild brawl afterwards. So apparently this is going to be next.
Yeah,
I'm a gigantic Minoru Suzuki fan. I think he's awesome. He's just a mean, old, angry, grizzled veteran with a ponytail. And the rest of his head is shaved. And he shaves designs into his buzzed head. And I tried to talk Whitney to let me do that with my hair, and she actually seemed open to the idea. I've had many bad haircuts. This wouldn't be the first or the last. And Nakamura, it looks so road-owned. I don't know if this is like just something new. It looks like he's been road-owned a lot more in the last year or so, couple of years. Maybe it's the haircut. Maybe he's always looked like this. I don't know, but he just looks rough. But they had a pretty good match. Shelton Benjamin beat Nakamura clean with the pay dirt. So obviously they love Shelton and they want to do something with him because that's a very big win. And it's pretty good. Not a great match or anything like that, but this was a pretty good match. Shelton looked pretty good. He still moves all right, even though he's almost 40. And
is he really?
Oh yeah, he's like 38 or something like that, if I recall correctly. Let's find out.
Wow,
how old do you think he was?
I guess that makes sense, doesn't it?
It's in developmental in the 90s. 37 years old.
Yeah.
almost 38. Actually, Jesus, he's younger than me. Anyway, point is, he's too old to be jumping around so much. That's what I have to say about that. This was fine. It's pretty good.
We had Kazushi Sakuraba come out, announce his return. He challenged Yuji Nagata. Notes here say he's been out of action since April 7th's invasion attack, which seems very redundant. He suffered a right arm dislocation while competing in a tag team match against Yuji Nagata.
Yeah.
Match 6, and definitely the most memorable match on the show. Tetsuya Naito versus Yujiro Takahashi in the most violent pro wrestling match I have seen, seriously, in years. These dudes beat the fuck out of each other.
I think you're confused. The Goto Shibata match, they killed each other.
Oh, fuck.
Naito and Takahashi.
Oh, no, you're right. You are very right. You are very right. Naito, okay, yes. Goto and Shibata beat the fuck out of each other.
Well, which one are we talking about now?
We're talking about Naito.
All right. Naito was returning.
Save the show.
And he faced Yujiro. They've had about 8 million matches together. And Naito looked great in this match. Both
yes,
looked good.
That is true.
Naito looked great. And he won. I gave it 3.75 stars. I thought it was very good. I don't really know what else to say about it.
The big thing I got out of Naito here was he hit a couple of very basic moves, but they were very basic moves that looked awesome. Like, he hit the flying forearm off the ropes, like Shawn Michaels has done in every match since 1993. Only when Naito did it, I thought, holy crap, that's the best flying forearm I ever saw. Then he immediately hit a German suplex, and I thought, holy crap, that's a great German suplex. And then he hit a twisting press thing off the top rope, which is a little more complicated. But okay, then we had the ultra-violence display. Hiroki Goto versus Katsuyori Shibata. These are the two men that beat the fuck out of each other.
It's coming back from knee surgery. That's what it was. He had knee surgery.
Who did?
Naito.
I see. Well, by the end of this, Goto and Shibata should have had surgery on everything. They needed an everything transplant.
I don't know if I'd give this match 5 stars, but this match was awesome. This was as much of a fight
yes,
as you could have in pro wrestling. In fact, I'd rather get in a fight than have a pro wrestling match like this.
Yes.
Because at least in a fight,
you can defend yourself.
I could try to defend myself. I could try to protect my face.
And if you get in a bad spot, the ref will save you.
Yeah, not here.
These guys spent 15 minutes in a bad spot, and there was no one to save them.
Absolutely killed each other.
Carnage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you want to, like, okay, there's pro wrestling fans. You love pro wrestling for what it is. And then there's mixed martial arts. And there's a lot of pro wrestling fans, as all of us listening to this are well aware, that they love pro wrestling, but they don't like mixed martial arts. Because there's something about pro wrestling, I don't know if it's just they grew up with it, the ropes, the high flying, the wacky spots, whatever it is, that even though pro wrestling is fake mixed martial arts, in fact, they don't like real mixed martial arts. They find it boring or whatever the case might be. If you, as a pro wrestling fan, are one of those people, and you don't like mixed martial arts, but you want to see a pro wrestling match where you can pretend that you're actually watching two guys fight under the rules of pro wrestling, and they're having a real fight, and they're going to be doing wrestling moves in a wrestling ring in the middle of this real fight, this is the match for you. This was a pro wrestling real fight. Just beat the piss out of each other. Kicked each other in the face, punched each other all over, dropped each other on their heads, just lariats to the neck, just like the most violent. Like, never have a match like this, everybody.
No, this is bad for you.
I am hesitant to praise this match so much because I'm sure there's a youngster listening that is going to watch this match and go, man, someday I'm going to have a match like Goto and Shibata.
No.
Don't do that.
Don't ever do this, any of you.
These guys should never do this again. Like, maybe if you're a pro wrestler, like, one time in your life, if you're going to win the championship or you're in a championship match and it's, like, in the biggest show of the year for, like, a promotion that actually matters, so really, like, maybe WWE or maybe the Tokyo Dome, that's about it. Like, maybe you should do one match like this, but don't do this regularly because you're just going to end up all screwed up. They killed each other.
So, with all that said, the finish was Shibata laid Goto on the mat, lifted him up into a sitting position, hit the ropes, kicked him in the face as hard as he could, and pinned him.
Yeah.
All right.
He put him in a sleeper. The ref checked the arm, and Goto was not quite going to sleep, but he was kind of half asleep. So Shibata put him on the mat and then kicked him in the face and pinned him.
Yeah.
This was like, this was something else. I don't know what to say about it. It may win match of the year.
It was very memorable.
Certainly a match you won't forget. Quick. Outrageous. That's what this was.
It was outrageous.
It's just, I have no other way to describe this except it was outrageous.
Match 8. Special single match. Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Prince Devitt.
Yes.
Yeah. The other match, I will not lie, the other match is more memorable. This was better.
Thing with New Japan is, like, I know that there were, I don't want to say everybody, I don't even know how many people, but I know there were some people that were upset at the idea that there was going to be interference in this match, or that there are matches in New Japan where people run in and the ref is distracted and an American style stuff in your New Japan matches. But you know what? What was great about this show is that there was all sorts of different stuff.
Yes, I was just thinking that exact same thing.
There was that opening match, the dark match with just, you know, some old guys just having a basic, although there was a ref bump and gimmicks in that match, I might add. But you had an awesome high flying tag team match. You had just kind of an undercard 8-man or whatever with Bad Luck Fail. You had your 3-way for the tag titles with the legendary tag team Tenzan and Kojima, and then some other guys, including the Americans, Lance Archer and Davey Boy Smith, just a 3-way tag. And you had the shoot fight of death. You had the return match, which was just great pro wrestling. You had the tag match. And then you had this, which was Prince Devitt, who is a heel, and he's got an evil heel faction, which, by the way, includes Bad Luck Fail.
True.
And he was going up against the longtime, multi-time Hall of Famer, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and he cheated at every turn because he's going to beat this guy.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he did, and his evil heel team kept trying to interfere, and finally they managed to get him. They got Tanahashi, and Devitt hit him with I guess it's a DDT. It's more a brainbuster. I mean, it's basically a brainbuster.
He dropped him on the top of his head.
Oh, yeah. He killed him and got the pin and won. And it was fabulous. Prince Devitt is a great wrestler.
Yes.
Tanahashi is a great wrestler. And I know it's not pure to have just two great wrestlers having a great match when a bunch of dudes run in for the heel. But you know what? Awesome. Prince Devitt, the evil heel with the evil diabolical crew.
I love his entrance and his exit, which is right into the ring on Bad Luck Fail shoulders.
Yeah.
That's great. So he comes out and they put him up on the apron and the lights go out and suddenly his jacket begins to blink. And it says R&R on the back because he calls himself the Rock and Roller. And obviously I do not speak Japanese, but the
or English half the time.
I barely speak English. But they clearly mentioned Chris Jericho's name here, so I assume they're just saying, this guy is ripping off Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
And then the match started, and Tanahashi is such a great babyface. He never whined, he never complained, he just, when a guy tried to interfere, sometimes he got interfered with and he got hit, but sometimes he saw them coming and he cut them off at the pass. Like, the highlight was, you know, guys get up in the apron and he'd hit him. He had a dropkick or whatever. But then two guys jumped up on the apron in the same corner, and he hit a flying body press into the corner that knocked both of them off and left him on top of the turnbuckle. That was awesome. And they wrestled and wrestled, and yes, at the end, finally, it was 4-on-1, and there was too much interference, and Devitt hit his lifting DDT brainbuster thing that looked like it killed him, and then he won. And that was excellent.
And you know what I love about New Japan? You got a guy like Prince Devitt, and he has this match here, and he faces Hiroshi Tanahashi, who I believe was the last champion. I may be wrong, but I'm almost positive. Just lost the title a while back. In fact, I'm 99.9% positive.
Actually, even I'm sure of that.
So he faced the last champion. He beat him, albeit via outside interference. And he, because he is the IWGP junior champion, and he beat the former champion at the next New Japan iPay-per-view, which is coming up in, I think it's July 5th, for the IWGP junior title, Prince Devitt is in the main event. He is the main eventer, the final match on the show. He is defending his title against Ghetto. I can't even like think of any sort of way to describe this to American fans. This kind of, this match here,
this logic,
this idea that like at Money in the Bank, because like Daniel Bryan beat Randy. I can't even come up with something comparable. But you know what? Awesome. Prince Devitt against Ghetto in the main event for the IWGP Junior title. It's great, and it makes sense. Dude just beat Tanahashi. He's the champion. Let him finish out this pay-per-view. That's awesome. And Bad Luck Fale is on the show as well.
The main event of this pay-per-view was for the IWGP heavyweight title. Champion, oh, look at this name. Kazuchika Okada. Okada's very easy. Against Togi Makabe.
Yep.
See, I would have thought Makabe. But I won't lie. I was burned out by this point. It was a very long match. 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I will also not lie. About halfway through, I realized that I had these men mistaken the entire time. I remember Okada being blonde, and
you could ask, you know.
I could have. It's more fun this way. Makabe had a ridiculous blonde perm, which I compare to Josh Koscheck, and you actually far more accurately compared to Harley Race.
Yeah, you look like Harley Race.
You look like Harley Race. You had the belly of Harley Race too. And, yeah, it was very, very long. It looked fine. Okada has an amazing dropkick, and he eventually won with the Rainmaker, which is his short arm lariat.
Vinny's downplaying this match.
I'm sure I'm doing a horrible job.
It was a long show. That's no lie. And the first half of this match, I was kind of like, okay, I've watched a lot of Japanese pro wrestling in the last 4.5 hours. But, by about the halfway mark, this match became awesome. And the last 5 minutes absolutely ruled. And
I will say, in my defense, I did note to you and your wife that the crowd was going ballistic insane.
Yes.
To the point where it was coming out distorted on the sound.
Yeah. Last 5 minutes was out of this world. And the match itself, actually, speaking of different styles, this was, I don't want to say this was like a WWE style match. But if you just compare this to like the Goto Shibata match, obviously, or a lot of the other matches on the show, this match would have fit in on a WWE pay per view, and I think the fans would have understood it, and I think they would have gone, well, I don't know if they would have gone crazy for it because they didn't know either guy, but if they knew either guy, this would have fit right in as a great main event on a WWE pay per view, and WWE was interested in Okada because yes, he's tall. So they look for, you know, but he stayed with New Japan. He's the champ. Had a great match with Makabe here. And this show was awesome. This match was great. Devitt Tanahashi was great. Goto Shibata was awesome. Romero and Kozlov against Kushida and Shelley. Awesome. And you also got to see Bad Luck Fale. And, the Naito and Takahashi match was awesome. So basically, if you want to see an awesome pay-per-view, this is it. You go to Ustream/NJPW, and you should be able to buy it there on the right-hand side of the screen. If you click that video on demand, Dominion. It's called Dominion, June 22nd, from the Bodymaker Coliseum, I believe it's called, in Osaka. So, fabulous show. 2 thumbs up. I'm sure we'll talk about it more with Dave tomorrow on Wrestling Observer Radio. But anyway, we're out of here, everybody. I have talked way too long. I'm going to wrap this show up. Don't forget, we got a lot of stuff coming up. New Observers, new Figure Fours, new radio shows. Lance Dorman's going to be on, I believe, today. And new Wrestling Observer Radio today. And Brian and Vinny is back on Thursday. And Todd Martin, we got so much stuff. So check it out, everybody. We'll talk to you again after a while.
Bye.